how do you conduct yourself as far as the laws of the land are concerned? It is a weakness that all of us have. There's a reason for this, and that is that every nation has laws, and some of these laws in every nation are dumb, foolish, idiotic, and stupid, aren't they? I mean, isn't that the way you feel? Now, the ones you like, I might not like. The ones I like, you might not like. If you are a businessman, I might tell you that I like that B&O tax. I mean, I think that thing ought to be raised. Now, Randy starts grinning back there because he thinks it should be lowered. You say, what are you talking about? Well, there's a businessman's tax. And wouldn't it be nice, don't you think really, that it's better to tax the businessman who's making all that money and let us poor customers go more free? Doesn't that sound good? You see, as you start looking at it, well, all I'm saying is, if you own a business, you immediately come up and say, wait a minute, there's some things you don't understand. Randy, what happens if they raise the B&O tax? What happens to my price of jewelry? I'm going to pay for it anyway. So he's going to do that to me. Now, when he tells me that, I don't like that. See? I like the laws that will help me. I don't like the laws that will hurt me. Those of us who could see the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit saving us some money and saving a lot of lives enjoyed, and we appreciated the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. The individual that didn't want his freedom curtailed, he didn't care anything about the money that it might save in gas or energy or so forth, and he hadn't thought about life, he hated the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. And on you go. What I'm saying is, any law that is enacted, there will be a group of people that will like that law, and there will be a group of people who do not like that law. Now, the reason for this is very simple. Why is any law enacted? Any law. Why is it put in? To control. Why do you want to control? Yeah, you want to control the good of the people, but it would be good for us not to permit just any teenager or anybody going to the moon without, first of all, checking out and getting a license and so forth, making sure they know how to go about it, having a proper space suit. But there are no laws controlling that. All right, there's no need. Why? Nobody is going up there. In other words, nobody is doing that stupid thing, right? See, nobody is going to the moon and then getting out and getting ready to go jump, and all of a sudden they find there's no air and they don't have a spacesuit, and so they suffocate and they die. Now, if all of a sudden teenagers find a way to go to the moon, and they're just popping up there all day long, and they hop out to go to the moon party and get out there and gasp and drop over dead, and so the surface of the moon is just littered with teenagers, what will our Congress do? They'll either provide money to send them all there if they're smart, but being dumb like our lawmakers are, they will pass a law, you can't go to the moon until, first of all, you go down to the driver's bureau and pass the test on how to get there and pass the test on how to use a space suit and done all this for the protection of the people. What I'm saying is, it's only when people start damaging or hurting themselves or other people that laws are enacted. You never have a law other than for that. Why do you have a law 20 miles an hour in front of a school zone, but you don't have a law 20 miles an hour in front of a barn, a farmer's barn? Well, you don't have too many problems going 20 miles an hour in front of a farmer's barn, do you? You say, well, I never thought about that. Well, just think of the danger. If those little baby calves got out, And every time that you go in front of a barn, there's a little baby calf out there, and you have to weave around, and they're all getting killed and all that. It's really dangerous. Don't you think we ought to put a law in 20 miles an hour in front of a farmer's barn? No. Why? Because people are not hitting calves in front of a farmer's barn. But what happens if there's no law in front of a schoolhouse? How fast will we all go? Zip, 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 zip. Kids are going to be jumping this way and that way, and it's just going to be a terrible thing. Or what I'm saying is, there are no laws ever enacted until there is an adequate number of people that is doing this particular thing which harms themselves or other citizens. Then you have to have a law to control those people. Well, when you put in a law to control those people, the rest of us like it, but what do those people think about that law? Take the ultralight airplane. When they came out, anybody could fly. All you did is just go out and buy an ultralight airplane and go fly. There were no laws to control that. But then they started bringing in laws to control it, and now then you have to go and be checked out and get a license to fly an ultralight airplane. Well, they took that freedom away from us. Why did they take it away from us? Yeah, because people are going out buying ultralight airplanes, going up and killing themselves. See? And so they now have that law. Okay, now, are you for that law or against it? Is that a good law or not? That's a good law. See, that keeps somebody like Randy there that going out buying an ultralight airplane, going up and killing himself, then I have to take care of his kids. See? So, I want to keep Randy around, and so we'll just put a law in there. He has to get a license before he can do that. See? But what does Randy think about that if he wants to fly an ultralight? Dirty, rotten law. Okay. Now, living within governmental regulations is a major part of your life, and it's going to give you problems all your life. So that's what he's dealing with right here. How do you handle this situation? Okay, let's look down verse 9. He said, "All this have I seen and applied my heart unto every work that is done under the sun. There is a time wherein one man hath power over another to his hurt." Now, he said that there are times when one fella has power over other people, and you can hurt the other people. It can be that way. That is part of life. There are people that's going to have power over you, and it's not going to be for your advantage. They're going to take advantage of you. 10. "So I saw the wicked buried, and they came to the grave, and they that had done right went away from the holy place and were forgotten in the city. This also is vanity." Now, this sentence is kind of hard to understand the way it's there. I think down in 16, if you see footnote 16, it says in here, "I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone away from the holy place, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. And men came and went." There's another possible reading of it. But now then, let's kind of paraphrase as we go through. "So I saw the wicked buried, and they came to the grave to pay honor to the wicked." People march by the grave when a wicked man dies, when somebody that has murdered millions and millions of people, such as the last leader in Moscow, and he died. How many days was it people were just lined up and going by? Just day after day after day, wasn't it? A wicked man can die, and people just line up to go by. "And they that had done right," now, the people that had done right, "they went away from the holy place and were forgotten in the city." In other words, the people that said, "We want to do what is right," and they make sacrifices, and they do that which is right and proper, how far up the street do people line up to pay homage to them? You don't. That's not the way it works, is it? Now you might say, "Well, this isn't right. This isn't the way it should be." Well, that's what he's saying. This is not the way it should be, and that's why he puts the last little phrase in there. And what is the last little phrase? "This also is vanity." So, if you think that you've found the way to live on this earth, that you will always do that which is right, and everybody will appreciate you for doing that which is right, and in order to show what a great person you are because you did that which is right, they will honor you when you die because you have always done that which is right, what are you going to find out when you attend your own funeral? No, there are going to be more people at the wicked. If take a murdering individual and give him lots of power, and he does all this, people are going to line up, and there's going to be more people at the wicked. So, if that's what life is all about, then that's also his vanity. Now, verse 11. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Now, again, here we're talking about laws of the land. And talking about why certain people do certain things. And that is, even when laws are given, well, first of all, when you have a law, what must you have to go along with the law? Now, you have a law, and something must follow. Now, we had a law against smoking in the King County up until, I think, this last year. We had a law against smoking, and it was never enforced. Why? You know what was lacking? Our lawmakers, our brilliant lawmakers, didn't. What? We didn't have a punishment. We had a law that there are to be no smoking areas in certain places. And restaurant owners and so forth must enforce that. Okay, now, there must be a law and there must be a punishment to that law. Right, now, in this case, there was no punishment. Now, if there's a law that has a punishment, then that equals enforcement or obedience. That is when people are going to obey. Now, we had that law against smoking, but there was no punishment involved there. So, how many people really obeyed that law? It was frivolous. Now, you would think that lawmakers who understand law, and that's their whole life, would never do such a thing as that, but they did do that. Now, then, this last year, they did put in a penalty. They did put in a $100 penalty or whatever it is in here. But now, there's two things that are involved in here. That any time that you make a law to cause somebody to do something, number one, you must have an adequate punishment. You must have a punishment that is equivalent to the law that you break. Now, under the law of Moses, there was a tremendously good law under there that dealt with this. What was it? What did God say? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now, in our culture today, we say, oh, boy, that's a bad law, right? That old eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, you know, that was bad stuff. And aren't we glad that we're out of that? And we totally misunderstand that. What we do today is that people just pick it up, read the Sermon on the Mount there about that, and they, oh, that's just bad. But it's interpreted this way. That is that they say, now this is not true, but they think that back under the old law that God gave me the right that if you knock my eye out, I just get up and knock your eye out. And if you took a life of somebody, I just take your life. If you knock my tooth out, I get up and I knock your tooth out. In other words, I could take vengeance on you. That's not what he says back under there. What that law dealt with was this, that God said that you are to take this crime to the courts of the land, to the rulers, to the judges. And then God took the punishment away from man. That really is what that is. That God took it away from man. God knew that man would not handle it properly. So God then set this law in, and he told the judges. Now, any time that anybody brings a crime before you, and they have broken a law, such as they've murdered, or they've knocked out a tooth, or they've cut off somebody's arm, or they whatever they've done, then the punishment must be not less than, nor more than, the crime. The punishment has to be exactly as the crime. Now, if I'm a judge, and you come to me, knock out my tooth, and then I sit on the judgment seat, and I now have the right to determine what your punishment will be. What will your punishment be? You knock out my tooth, what will I do? I do what you do. What would you do? You knock out two teeth, wouldn't you? Or three teeth? Or an eye? In other words, if you hurt me, I will come back and I will punish you much more severely than what you need to be punished. Now, what is the punishment? You knock out my tooth? What should the punishment be?
I'd like to knock out every tooth you've got. But what that is? One tooth. See, one tooth.
Okay, now on the other hand, if somebody I hear that I don't know comes in, brings their case up, and says the guy knocked out their tooth, I listen to the guy, and the guy says, well, I just momentarily lost my mind. You know, I mean, he said something to me, and I got mad momentarily, and I just had a fight with my wife, and I was momentarily insane, and I am so sorry. What then will I say? What will his punishment be? Well, under this case, don't you ever do it again. Or I might fine him $5. Now, what's wrong with that? Punishment's not enough. So, what God said was that the punishment has to fit the crime. That's what the eye of the eye and the tooth for the tooth is for. Now then, there's something else that is involved. Another thing. Not only that must there be a punishment, but what else must there be before there's going to be obedience to anything? Enforcement. Swift enforcement. So it's going to have to be carried out with speed. That's it. That's what this right here says. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. That is, the punishment is not given there very rapidly. Therefore, the end result of that is that the hearts of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Instead of obeying, whenever there is no speed, this right here then is going to be that people are going to do that which is evil because it's not adequately carried out with enough speed. Today, you go out and you murder somebody, how long is it before you're put in the electric chair if you are put in the electric chair? It goes out for years, doesn't it? See? Goes out for years in this thing. I read one article on the Indians negotiating, trying to get, you know, part of Tacoma back and all of this, saying that the white man taking advantage of them. Well, they're negotiating now. Whether they're right or wrong is beside the point of this class. Here is the whole thing, that some of the Indians are saying, well, why negotiate? Let's go for the whole thing. Let's make them give us back, you know, half of Tacoma and this whole thing and here. Hold out. Let's get it. You know what the white man's argument is, that you better negotiate right now? We're going to give you so many millions, and we're going to give you this and a big bunch, and it would be the best for you if you did it right now. You know what the argument is? And they're probably going to settle on this basis. The lapse of time. Because we'll keep this thing tied up in court for 25 to 30 years anyway. It'll be that long before you'd ever get a settlement, even if you win the case. Now, all of you guys who are fighting this, you're going to be dead at that time. And then once you get that, your kids... Now, think about all you guys. How old are you going to be? Dave, how old are you going to be in 30 years from now? Over 50. Life's over, right? No, life is starting. They've been observing me and all you jealous. But at any rate, life's over, boy. I mean, you know, it's not worth living there. And once you get the decision, how long is it before you get the money? There's another thing you see they pointed out. Even said your generation will be of the older people. You're going to be gone. Your kids are going to be up at the end of life, and then once you reach it, then before you get the money, they're going to be gone. And so the only people that's going to reap the benefits of this thing, the day there is an Indian, is his kids. That's all that's going to be able to reap, you see, in any of this. So we negotiate back and forth on that basis. Well, I just bring that up to show you that in our good old American system, right there is where we have totally gone astray today. And so the sentences must be speedily executed. Now, this is given in the context of law, civil law. But now, that doesn't help you and me too much, because we knew that before we came in here, didn't we? In other words, all of us knew everything that I said before we came in here, that it's crazy, it's stupid, it's idiotic, the way our government operates.
Tell me, though, how you can use this to your own personal advantage and save you a whole lot of trouble in raising your children. That's right. This is not directed toward parent-child. It's directed toward superior, somebody who is over somebody, and to the person who is in subjection. And specifically, it's talking about governmental authority. But do parents sustain the same relationship to children as government sustains to you? Yeah. So this principle right here can be applied to your children. And if you will learn this, and you will do this one simple thing, you just can't imagine the pleasure that it will bring you. You can't imagine the problems it will solve in your home if you will do this one particular thing here. Now, the reason I'm emphasizing this is, again, every one of us knows this, but why is it that this system seems to be the one that always prevails instead of the other one? The other one is right. Why does that one always seem to be the one that prevails? That's the one that prevails in government. And to be frank and truthful with you, it's the one that prevails in parent-child, too. As you go out, you bring me in 1,000 parents with their children. How many of them, out of 1,000 sets of parents, how many will be taking this in comparison to this route? Very few. Why? Okay, this is easier. This is the easiest thing to do. How many times do your children do something when they need to be punished on the spot, but you don't have time because you're right in the middle of a red-hot card game? Why, all the time, right? Every holiday. You could never punish them on holidays because you're always busy doing a certain thing. During the week, they do something wrong. But at that time, you're right in the middle of a red-hot movie or a football game, or there's always something. It's you're eating dinner. There's always something involved, right? Now, it takes a whole lot of effort to expend to care for those children the way they should be cared for, and to execute their punishment speedily so that they'll understand that they should not do a certain thing. So, before we condemn government, let's apply it in our life and solve our own problems. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because actually it works out that it's harder the other way around with kids. I've noticed, like, kids at church, you know, when you're in the worship service, if you take the time to do it for this maybe a couple of months, mm-hmm. consistently, it may be years of harder for this.
Right.
But it's hassling all the time.
Oh, right. Yeah, it saves years and years and years. 2 months can save 20 years, you see, of hassling. But for the 2 months, it's hard to do. See? And so that's the reason why that most of us take this route here, because what we're after is the easy life right now. Isn't that what really we're after in every realm? The easy life right now, today. You see, what's the easiest thing for me to do right now? So, learn from that, and you can have some happy family. All right, now verse 12 and 13. We come back to that principle we've been talking about before. Before we get into that, let me ask you here, does it pay to be good? Yeah, that's one of the principles of life he's been talking about. It does pay to be good. Now, is there ever a time when a bad man comes out better than a good man? Yeah. It does. See, now he's talking about all these things right in here. In fact, what about this ruler up here? Who gets the biggest funeral? The bad guy or the good guy? The bad guy's going to get the biggest funeral. He's going to get the best almost in every way, it appears. All right, now look at 12. He said, though a sinner do evil 100 times and prolong his days, yet surely I know that it shall be well with them that fear God, that fear before Him. But it shall not be well with the wicked, neither shall he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he feareth not God. Now, there again, he sets forth that principle. And that is, I don't care if you bring me an example and you say, well, Lowell, look, here's a guy that is the orneriest, low-down scoundrel in the whole world. He has cheated openly. In fact, I know of guys that go down and challenge the IRS, don't you? And tell them, I'm not paying my taxes. What are you going to do about it? And they're still running around free. And they make fun of them and so forth. And they still run around free. Now, I know what would happen to me if I was a day late. I sent mine in on April the 16th. I'd be in Walla Walla for a couple hundred years. Sure. So you go around, and I've had people say, you don't have to pay your taxes. Don't pay them. Don't send them in. Just don't do this. Don't do that. You don't have to do this. You don't have to take a breathalyzer test. Well, what's happened to these guys that don't take a breathalyzer test? Well, most of them are getting off, aren't they? I mean, getting off scot-free. And you look around and you see all this stuff. So, yes, but what he's saying is, don't give me all that malarkey. Don't bring me this. I don't care if you could bring me a sinner who's done evil 100 times over, and every time he does it, it works out good for him, it prolongs his days. I know there is a principle that works. And that is that for those that fear God, they're going to be the one that prolongs their life, and the others are not. Heard a couple of guys talking the other day. Older men. They talked about people that smoke, people that didn't smoke, and said, "Yeah," and said all these people, you know, said that smoke. They say, "Well," said, "you know, I've got an uncle and he's 98 and smoked every day." And one of them kind of giggled, said, "Yeah," and said, "Yeah," and said, "If he hadn't smoked, he'd been 198." You see, in other words, you don't know on the other side of the thing. But sure, there are guys that smoke, cuss, and drink, and all that, and live to be 98. What does that prove? It really doesn't prove anything. Yeah, except they're lucky. They're one that beats the odds. They had certain genes in them. They just certain ways that happened. And if they hadn't have done that, who knows what would have happened to them? That's what he's saying in here. Don't give me all that stuff. Now, in verse 14, though, he explains it. There is a vanity which is done upon the earth. Now, here is something that just comes out to a big zero. That there are righteous men unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. What does that mean? What happens according to the work of the wicked? What? Alright, evil things are going to happen. In other words, punishment is going to be involved. Now, there are righteous people that end up in dire trouble like a wicked person, you know, is supposed to end up. There are that kind of an individual. It says, again, there are wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous. Now, righteous people do not have problems cast upon them. However, there are wicked people that do wickedness, and they don't have problems cast upon them. So you can go out and you can find all these examples. That's what he's saying. So, I look at the situation, and what I see is that, yes, sir, it pays to be good. It doesn't pay to be evil. However, I see cases where the evil people have what really belongs to the good people. Let's take smoking. It's been proven now. I think every cigarette you smoke takes 3 minutes off your life. And so the smokers are the ones that is taking their life off, and out of 1,000 people that smoke and 1,000 people that do not smoke, 998 of the smokers are going to die much younger than the ones who don't smoke. But there are going to be 2 people out of that 1,000 that are going to live to be 110 smoking every day. And there's going to be some people out of the ones that do not smoke that are going to die at 21. Isn't that right? And so what he's saying is, I understand all of this. I understand this the way it is. And so it just shows that this is a vanity. That this is an emptiness that you got. You can't do something. You can't do that which is right and say, now I will never suffer because I did what was right. You can't do that. Because it might be, you might be that one.
He said, "Then I commended mirth, because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be joyful, for that shall abide with him in his labor all the days of his life which God hath given him under the sun." So he said, then I looked at the thing, and here's what I came to the conclusion. Now, by the way, what is the question we're working on? There's one question we're working on. When you come to a conclusion like this, you have to know what that question is. We're looking for an answer. We're looking for an answer, but what is the question? Yeah, what do you do with life under the sun? How do you handle life right now? Okay, what you do with life then is that you enjoy yourself, that you eat and drink and be joyful. Enjoy yourself right now. If you're young, you enjoy yourself. If you're old, you enjoy yourself. You enjoy yourself right now in whatever condition that you're in. Don't look to find yourself in another condition before you start enjoying life. Now, that this is something that the reason that there's a whole book in the Bible on this is because this is something every one of us really does not do. We always look to another phase in our life before we start enjoying life, right? How many of you right now are looking at a phase in your life and you have plans when everything is really going to be fun? You're really looking and things are going to smooth out. How many of you got it? I don't see how many truthful people we've got here. We've got some liars. You want to try it again? How many of you? Raise your hand. I know over here, Cal and Kim, see, they didn't raise their hand. They want you to think they have it put together. They don't. Now, the fact of the case is, every one of us has that. You see, every one of us has it. Now, if I can just get over this one hurdle and get this thing solved, get this put together, next summer, by the way, next summer, oh boy, I'm going to have it really put together. See, I mean, by next summer, it's all going to flow together. My life from there on is really going to be running smooth. It's going to be next summer. Now, you know the problem with that? That's been going on for about 20 years. It's always next summer. Next summer, I'll have this debt paid off, and I'll have that headache out of the way, and then I'm not going to get myself in this financial bind that I'm in, and I will really have it made. And so, next summer, something else happens, somebody else gets me in a financial bind. And then, okay, now then. And on, on, and on, and on, and on, and on it goes. But I think most of us could say the same thing. You know, by next summer, by next year, that's when we look at it. By next year, I'll have it all put together. Well, am I saying that's wrong? Am I telling you that you're foolish to have those dreams for next year? No. Oh, no. In fact, if you have those dreams for next year, does that help you to enjoy life right now? Oh, certainly. That's one of the privileges and pleasures of being a human being, where you can look out and make those plans of what is going to happen for next year. But here's where our danger is. What is our danger when we're making plans for next year and enjoying life next year when we get this or that? What? We could dwell on it too much, but there's another thing that I'm after. Yeah, in other words, what happens to us today? Next year I can be happy, therefore today I am sad. Isn't that the way we think? It's really a bad situation, you see. Next year I have it all put together and then I can be happy. So today I don't have it all put together and so I'm sad. No, that's not true. What you say is next year it will be better and maybe I will be happier. But what about me today? It's good and I can be happy. And so that's the thing that he's telling us then that we need to know. Okay, we'll not go on to chapter 9 because the next subject right there starts in verse 16. Last week.